Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we are joined by Craig Hill. He's the manager of the loan division of the Norris Group. And Greg Norris, he runs all of the property buying and selling. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Craig, how long have you been in the hard money loan business?
Probably close to 24 years.
24 years. In the beginning, who was the typical borrower of the money that you lent?
Way back then, the typical borrower was a homeowner. Usually it was a second trustee, a real small loan, maybe $10,000 to $20,000 to bring somebody current or just to pay off some bills. And then it's kind of transformed from there.
When did that change? What year did that start making a transition?
That changed probably about 5 years, which would have been, say, 20 years ago. They made the regulations a lot more difficult on people that were trying to lend, like, small amounts of money.
Okay.
So they raised the limits on what you had to lend somebody, which was unfortunate because what a lot of people did back in those days, instead of writing somebody the second that they needed, I mean, they'd write them a brand new first that they didn't need.
Okay.
So that was really it was kind of regulated away from doing that, where you could help somebody with like a small loan. And they took that away from as an option for a lot of people.
At about that same time, California had the 90s downturn, and you started getting approached by another class of borrowers that you hadn't dealt with before.
Yes, about that same time, probably in 91 or 92, I would imagine, is when we met.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you came to me with the idea of lending money to somebody who was buying the house for an investment. And it was really a great concept because basically, as long as you could visualize as an investor, that means somebody with money or wanting to lend money, that you were looking at the exact same house. It turned from lending to a homeowner that owned the house and, let's say, didn't make enough money, never made many payments, and then the house next door was exactly the same as that house. The only difference was I was dealing with, whether it be yourself or another client, I was dealing with somebody that was going to buy the house, put money into it, make it a nice house, and then, sell it to another retail client. So it really transformed what I did. And essentially, from almost that point on, that's all I've been doing is lending money to investors.
Has the investor turned out to be a more reliable client for the making the monthly payments?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's night and day. I mean, historically, the people that I've lent to, and then the 12 years with the Norris Group, I mean, I would say our client's pay record would better any hard money company's pay record and probably almost all banks during that time, because it's you're dealing with intent. When somebody buys a house and they put some money in it and their intent is to fix it up, I mean, you don't have to question why they're borrowing the money.
Right.
It's very obvious. They're going to borrow the money because they want to make a profit on the house. And that was one of the hardest things way back 25 years ago, was trying to judge somebody's intent. Okay, why did they want to cash out $40,000? I mean, was it just it was going to help them in some way? Were they just going to get the $40,000 and leave? And another difference from, you know, going back to those old days, back then you used to get all your loans from other mortgage brokers. So you were kind of getting a lot of the information secondhand. Once I met you and started to lend to investors, it was very good because I'm able to deal every loan I do now, I deal directly with the person that's going to be borrowing the money. And I mean, that's just a very comforting feeling.
Greg, for the last probably year and a half, you've been chasing as is properties to buy. And part of what you did over the early months of that is you watched the inventory that the trustee sale buyers bought. Can you give us an idea of what was the parameters that you saw where they said, okay, that's the safest box for us?
Well, I think they were the ones that I saw that were most successful. They were going after the typical three-bedroom, two-bath house under 2,000 square foot. I think that was – they just felt it was a starter home. Probably at the peak of the market, they wanted to make sure that they had inventory probably in all markets that everybody wanted. They didn't specialize in the custom homes or the larger homes.
You just bought one that you're going to fix and resell yourself. When you approached, you checked out the conventional loan market. I'm just curious what you found available or not available.
Well, I think there are loans available for investors, but if you have over four properties, they're not willing to talk to you. Basically, there's a maximum of four.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the one that you bought, I know that you're capable of fixing it yourself. Is that something you're going to take on, or do you?
No.
you've retired?
I've retired from fixing houses myself.
Okay. Craig, why are conventional lenders hesitant to loan to the client that we have? Because, I mean, we found it to be very safe, and yet that's really a loan that they don't want.
Well, really, there is no reason I think they should be hesitant. I think they have a perception that lending to investors is a bad thing. That's just one area, one niche in the market where I think if they could just lend to investors, it would really help out the situation we're in now. It seems like they're almost willing to do anything in some cases to get a homeowner into a property, somebody that will live there. But once again, an investor's intent, and they're going to have usually more money down, just as much reason to stay in that property as maybe a homeowner, but they just don't seem to want to lend to that client.
Well, and they also don't want to even do the as-is lending at this point.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Greg, when did you start making offers for the REO properties out of the MLS? Do you recall how long ago that was?
I think it was towards the beginning of the year is when we started making offers out of the MLS. We were going to auctions. That took a lot of our time, but when we didn't have time to go to the auctions, we were making offers out of the MLS.
And what was that experience like in the beginning as far as making the offers out of the MLS?
Very unsuccessful.
Just a lot of lenders still very optimistic about what they were going to get?
Yes.
And frustrated realtors not being able to get the lenders to move?
Yes.
Okay. What were the odds of, when you made 100 offers, what were the odds of buying how many properties? One?
Well, I'd say in the first 6 months of this year, we bought zero out of the MLS.
Okay.
The last 6 months of the year, we've bought most of our deals out of the MLS.
Okay. Do you think the first 6 months served any function?
Sure. It served in making the banks hungry enough to get real.
But as far as anything that you did, in other words, your name showed up over and over and over again. Do you think that served any function on the other side where an agent saw that name repetitively and said, these guys are at least serious?
Sure. Some credibility that we're repetitive and that we're not going away and that we do this for a living.
Yeah. Now, how has that changed now? We make offers, let's say, every month now. If we make 100 offers now, what are we likely to hit?
That's a good question. I would guess that our percentage is probably still 5% or less.
Okay. But that's enough.
Oh, absolutely.
In the last month that you really made an effort to make a fair amount of offers, we bought, what, about 12
properties.
Yeah. Okay. And we kind of have to go in stages because you can't buy 12 properties constantly because we have to put them in a pipeline after that.
Yeah. Okay. We're growing in that capacity.
Okay. Craig, at times you receive an urgent call to fund a deal within a few days. What is usually the cause for the rush?
Well, that's, I would say, probably 80% of those type of calls generally result in somebody has a property tied up. They have a promise from another lender, whether it be conventional or even maybe another private money source that just did not perform. So that's usually the frantic call that I get.
When we fund a hard money loan, the funds come from a real person's bank account, and I know you take that responsibility very seriously. Why does being the lender on a fixer-upper property to an investor make sense for the people with money?
Well, I think now it just I think it's always made sense, and now even more so. Earlier we touched on the fact that when an investor buys the house, you know their intent. I mean, they're going to try to fix that house up. They're going to try to sell it for a profit. So you're dealing with a client on the other side who wants to use your services again. So they're motivated by that. Currently, the values have dropped so far in most of the areas that we're doing loans in. Just to give you an example, I mean, typically now the loans are probably anywhere from $80,000 to $120,000 in like our main target market. Well, 2 years ago, we would have been lending $200,000 on those same houses, you know, based on very real appraisals.
Right.
So I just think it's just an excellent time to be on that side of the fence.
Let's talk a little bit about the side of the lender, the person that has the money. Do they like change? In other words, okay, we're now starting with a loan base. Then very commonly it's been in Southern California, and now it's the numbers say $100,000 to $150,000. If you end up with a $250,000 loan, or you end up with a Northern California trustee, tell me what that other side looks for and what are they concerned about?
Yeah, the perception right now is, I mean, almost across the board, everybody really wants a cookie cutter is a word I use a lot, because everybody seems to want it, almost the same thing. They want that $100,000 loan, $150,000 loan. If we're going to move out of the area or do a larger loan, I think it's doable with the investors, but I think in this climate, they're probably looking for somebody that's very strong, probably willing to put up to 20% down on the purchase. So I think that's where it differentiates. Also, interestingly enough, with all the speaking that I know you do, we do get a lot of calls from investors in Northern California, which mm-hmm. we thought would be a great start for an investor base up there. But almost across the board, that group also wants to lend down here because they know that's our backyard. So that's turned into a good source of funds for us. But once again, they wanted to move the money to Southern California instead of up in Northern California.
So it takes time to transition to a new thought for an investor base.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that can be quite a long process.
We're asking everyone to put down payments now, pretty much always across the board.
Yes.
To our borrowers. What's the reaction been to that?
Well, from the person borrowing the money, surprisingly, they're a very realistic group. There's just not a lot of choices now. A lot of people have used sources in the past that are no longer in existence, whether it be other hard money companies have gone out of business. They might have had a business associate, a friend, a client that might have had a credit line in the past with a bank that might have funded their loans. So many of those other sources for people have disappeared that over time, they're very realistic about the expectations of a down payment. Usually the only people that complain about having to put a down payment might be somebody that calls me and they just don't have any money.
Okay.
And obviously we wouldn't want to be, you know, that's not a good situation for anybody on either side.
Okay. Greg, you said that a lot of the properties that we've recently bought are coming out of the MLS. What do you look for to give you an idea? Okay, that's worth pursuing.
Right now, it's probably anything that's listed within $30,000 of where I think I could buy it and sell it and make a profit.
Okay. And are you finding that more and more the first day listings are coming within that range? Is that becoming more common?
It's honestly just a variety of things. It's just a matter of sometimes it's short sales. Sometimes I've had my offers out there for months before they get accepted because everyone else falls to the wayside. Sometimes it is first day. Sometimes it's just banks get tired of all of the buyers that were supposed to stick around that didn't, and I end up being the only one left standing. So it's for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's just a motivated bank, and they decide they want to drop their price $30,000 that day.
We have a system that catches those price reductions as far as it comes out as a first day listing, I would imagine the price reduction does.
Yes, I'm looking in the MLS for anything that's changed in the last day.
Okay. You've dealt with REO agents now for quite a while. What are some of the things that get on their nerves about investors that you try to avoid?
You know, I don't hear very much from them, honestly. I don't hear many complaints.
Do you get to talk to them, or is the process almost all paperwork and no conversation?
It's almost no conversation.
Okay.
At least that's how I've run things so far. So,
okay.
No real relationship, because a lot of times it just seems like right now it's out of – it's not – it seems like when you were doing it, it was a lot more relationship-based, where a realtor had some persuasion over the bank.
Yes.
Now it seems like there's more of a just banks dictating things to the REO agents. REO agents are more of order takers right now instead of having some real say in the outcome of a sale of a property.
When you send over an offer, is it going to be countered every time? Does that usually happen?
No. A lot of times, I will get no response at all.
Okay, that's fairly common to get no response.
No response at all.
Okay, and we don't really follow up on that immediately.
No, I just assume, and I think I've dealt with a lot of them enough to know that they know that there's no reason to call me. I'll get an email shot to me or a fax or something like that that will say that the owner accepted a different offer or something like that on occasion. So some are better, some aren't. Honestly, I prefer just to not be contacted if I'm not
going to work.
Yeah, it's just a waste of my time anyway. So, I mean, if I'm not the one,
okay,
don't call me.
Okay. That's interesting. All right. Craig, between 2000 and 2006, about 100% of our deals were purchased from owners directly. And
yes.
Now how has that changed, the loans that we get now?
Well, I guess it's changed full circle, because I would say nearly 100% of all the deals that come in on the loan side now are either bought out of the MLS or at the various auctions that take place, some at the court steps, a few of those trustee sales, but some out of the REDC-type auctions. And then occasionally you might still get that probate deal or something like that, but very rare. Most of it is strictly right out of the MLS. It's just it just is very repetitive that way.
Do you have any sense of which one is leading the pack as far as MLS or the auctions?
Yeah, I would say the MLS is definitely probably, at this point anyway, 3 or 4 to 1 minimum.
Okay. Greg, about how many properties have you successfully bought this year? It's over 40, something like that?
Yeah, probably somewhere between 40 and 50.
Okay. What percentage of those do you think came from the auction?
Probably 30% to 40%.
That's quite a bit.
It's definitely more MLS now.
Right, but that's still more than I thought it was.
Hmm.
Okay, what you expect to attend more auctions in the near future?
I hope not.
That's a lot of work, isn't it?
It was, for very, very little results.
Yeah, that's that's the thing about being a buyer, is you have to go to whatever is working the best. But the auctions kind of worked for a purpose, though, because every time you bought a property, that was a relationship that we got to earn a commission. They got a name recognition. So in a way, it all leads up to being able to get an MLS offer more acceptable. What was the biggest frustration of going to an auction?
Just having to go see hundreds of properties, hoping to get 1 or 2% of them. I mean, literally, I remember going and seeing somewhere close to 600 properties for one REDC auction. Did not get a single one.
Yeah, I remember we almost had to give you oxygen that day. That's hard. I've been there. It's especially frustrating when they're not accepting the number, and you're the last number, but they don't accept it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, we've had not just a REDC auction. We've had very little success there. But Hudson & Marshall, when we were successful at bidding, most of the time we were countered, I think. And about how many times would you say that we refused that counter and finally did have an acceptance? Was that maybe 50% of the time?
I'm not sure. I'd have to review, honestly. It's been a while since it seemed like if we were countered, it was usually a no. Basically, it wasn't a deal because the bank just wasn't being realistic on the counter.
Okay.
That happened most of the time.
Okay.
So
we either got a yes or we got a counter that wasn't going to work.
Right. I think if I remember right, we, at the last successful Hudson & Marshall auction we went to, I think we won 13 properties and we only ended up with 6 or 7 of them.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, the counters were not acceptable.
Do you recall how many properties you had to go see for that?
About so, 500 to 600.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, I'm glad I delegated that to you this time. I used to get up at 4 in the morning to go to Barstow just so I could say I saw it. Yeah. Oh, good, the good old days. Craig, do you see a difference in the type of inventory that we're getting to loan on this time around as opposed to the 90s?
Yeah, the inventory is almost completely different. It seemed like back in the early 90s, it was a lot of older 30s, 40s, San Bernardino-type properties, a lot of maybe Moreno Valley. I know you bought a lot in Moreno Valley. So just a lot of smaller homes, a lot of two-bedroom, maybe one-baths. This time around, just as Greg mentioned, I think the investors are just a little more savvy with what they're buying. So fortunately, it's a lot of in those areas, Moreno Valley, San Bernardino, Fontana, we're getting a little bit bigger homes this time. We're getting a lot of newer inventory, which I don't remember seeing any of back in the 90s. So I do a lot of loans on houses that were built in somewhere in the 2000s. And, boy, tile roofs, just brand-new houses. So we seem to be getting an awful lot of inventory like that. So the inventory, in my opinion, is just much better. And I think that's a product of just how the market is this time and then just also awareness. I think we just are lending on those properties because they just seem to be much better.
If I was sitting at your desk, how many times a day does the phone ring with a new investor saying I'm getting into the business and I'm interested in seeing how we can work with you?
I would say on a weekly basis, I would say that call happens between 30 and 40 times a week.
Wow.
And I would say there's at least 10 plus people that actually have deals that they want us to look at. And after speaking that, I think that might even be low because there's an awful lot of people out there doing that.
I know. I noticed every time you get up to either use the bathroom or get a drink, it's Craig. You have a call on holding.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of calls from investors these days. That's for sure.
What is the main reason that if we do turn down somebody's credit, what seems to be the main theme for somebody getting turned down?
Well, I think the number one reason is I think a lot of people have the misconception that they can really, because we call it hard money, in the past it might have been true, but they think just because they find a property, they can borrow it with really no really substantial funds of their own.
Right.
So I think the major reason is just lack of funds on their part because of a lack of liquidity. Credit sometimes comes into play, but surprisingly, it's almost reverse of maybe a conventional loan. Somebody that maybe has had some credit problems in the past, and some investors do, but a lot of those investors also have large amounts of cash.
Mm-hmm.
So that really doesn't necessarily turn somebody down. It just means that as we start a relationship with them, we'll probably have them put more money into the deal.
Yeah, and we don't want them caught short because almost everything can go wrong in a market like this, that it's going to take longer and to sell and have more overhead than they thought. So we need to protect them if they're not going to do that themselves.
Exactly. Surprisingly, the majority of the people I turn down are very appreciative because they really just don't understand what it takes maybe to do the business. And we suggest ways, whether it be by getting a partner or rearranging their personal situation. I mean, we're trying to set them up for success.
Right.
A good investor for us is one that we're going to have for the years, not somebody that we do one loan with and then everybody has a bad taste left in their mouth. So we just try to set them up to be successful in the long run.
I know there's a lot of times where you've denied a deal for one reason or another, only to have them come back, 6 months later and go, "Wow, thank you very much for saying no to that."
Yeah, that's a very common call, and it's very gratifying, actually.
Yeah.
You know, because people really do appreciate it because so many people will kind of just tell them, "Oh, yeah, go ahead, go forward," and it's just not there sometimes.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us, and we'll pick it up on the next show.
Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.